The kid and Holly made their way over to the marshal's office. Holly scraped a match to life and lit the lamp on the desk.
There's a cot in the back room and a sofa out here. It's not too uncomfortable if you watch out for the broken spring.
I'll remember that.
The kid dropped the gear on the sofa. As he did so, she moved closer to him, and something stirred inside him. He had a feeling she wasn't looking for anything serious any more than he was, but he also had the distinct impression she was thinking about kissing him.
Oh!
Holly turned and plunged toward the door. The kid's hand shot out and gripped her arm, stopping her.
Let me go! Well, there's trouble out there!
And if you jerk that door open with the light still burning in here, you'll be a perfect target.
You're right.
Holly turned back to the desk, leaned over, and blew out the lamp. Darkness engulfed the office. She drew her gun as she pulled the door open and stepped out into the night. The kid was right behind her, also with his Colt in his hand. There was no cover out there, so the kid looped his free arm around Holly's waist and hurled them backward through the door. The kid rolled to the side and got the door closed. He surged to his feet and went to one of the windows. He recalled the windows were equipped with heavy shutters on the inside and slammed them shut.
Is there a back door?
Yes, I'll bar it.
Good idea.
The kid pulled one of the shutters back slightly to make a narrow gap through which he could look. The bushwhackers across the street had stopped shooting. He figured they were in that alley to open fire on anyone who left the marshal's office.
Sounds like the whole town's under attack. Who would do such a thing?
I've got a hunch it has to do with that hombre who was giving us the skunk eye in the general store this afternoon.
Some old enemy of Marshal Tate's? He must have brought a blasted army with him, from the sound of it.
That comment stirred something in the kid's memory. He didn't know if what he was thinking was possible or not, but he realized he couldn't rule it out.
What's your father going to do when he hears all that shooting?
What do you think he's gonna do? He'll come to see what it's all about. He'll do whatever he can to protect the citizens.
The kid knew she was right. Porter wouldn't want to put Jared Tate in harm's way, but his duty to the people of Chalk Butte would come first. Porter might tell Tate to stay put at the house, but it was also possible he would take the old lawman with him while he investigated the shooting. In a fight like this, having Tate around might even come in handy. Danger seemed to bring out the best in him and prod his brain into working more like it once had.
Will he try to make it here to the jail?
He might. He knows that's where we were headed, and he'll want to know that I'm safe.
This place is pretty sturdy, meant to be easy to defend.
We can't just sit tight. Papa's out there somewhere. I need to go help him.
Why don't you hole up here, and I'll slip out the back and see if I can find out what's going on. You can close and bar the door again behind me as soon as I'm out.
I know my way around this town a lot better than you do, blast it! I'm the one who ought to be going out there.
Yeah, but I've had more experience fighting killers.
How do you know that?
Take my word for it. Somebody's got to hold down the fort here in case your father and Marshal Tate show up, and you're the best one for the job.
All right, go on. But if you get shot to pieces, don't expect me to weep over your bloody corpse.
You wouldn't even shed a single tear?
Oh, go on before I change my mind, damn it.
They closed and fastened the shutters again, then retreated to the back room where the rear door was located. For all the kid knew, he'd be stepping into another ambush, but he had to risk it. They needed to know what the situation was so they could plan a counterattack.
Bar the door again as soon as I'm out, and don't open it unless you're absolutely sure who's on the other side.
I'm not a complete fool, you know. I've been deputy for several years. I've handled my share of trouble.
All right, I'll see you later.
Be careful, kid.
I intend to.
The kid moved along the rear wall of the jail until he reached the corner. Instinct made him pause there. Even though he hadn't been consciously aware of it, he had known someone was skulking around in the thick shadows next to the building. He pressed himself against the wall and waited. A few feet away, a deeper patch of darkness shifted. The kid's keen eyes gradually made out the shapes of two men working stealthily toward him. They stopped.
There's nobody back here. Doesn't matter. The boss said to watch the door, and if anybody tries to sneak out, ventilate them.
What if he's the hombre he's after? He'll be mighty upset if someone else kills him.
Yeah, but the main thing is, he don't want the old coot to get away, no matter who winds up killing him.
The kid's hunch was right. The men were after Marshal Jared Tate. The old lawman must have been one hell of a fine lawman to make so many enemies among the outlaw breed.
Well, I'll take one side of the door, you take the other. If anybody comes out, we'll have them in a crossfire.
Just be careful we don't shoot each other.
The kid remained motionless until the two men were in position flanking the jail's rear door. Then he made his move, coming up behind the closest one and looping an arm around the man's neck.
Davey!
The Kid pressed the muzzle of his Colt against the outlaw's forehead.
Oh, Davey can't hear you.
The kid reversed his Colt and used the butt to rap on the back door of the jail.
Holly, it's me, Kid Morgan. Open up, I've got a couple prisoners.
Kid? How do I know they don't have a gun on you?
Because I'd let them shoot me before I'd betray you.
The kid quickly put the two unconscious men into a cell. Holly lit a lantern so they could see their faces.
Whoever the boss of this gang is, he sent these two to watch the back door. They didn't get here quite soon enough. I was able to jump them.
That's pretty good work, taking them both without firing a shot.
Hold the light closer.
The kid drew his Colt again and pointed it at the two men.
Wake up, fellas, unless you'd rather die without seeing it coming.
The kid had never seen the men before, but was still convinced the attack on the town had something to do with the two men who'd been in the general store that afternoon.
You'd better talk, or I won't have any reason to keep you alive. Who's behind this? What does he want?
Who are you, mister?
Never mind that. Just answer the questions.
When you find out soon enough, our boss will wipe out the whole town if he has to get what he wants.
And that's Marshal Jared Tate, isn't it?
You can go to hell. I'm not talking.
Well then.
Don't shoot! Don't shoot! I don't reckon it matters whether you know or not. There's nothing you can do about it. The boss has got 50 townspeople rounded up and herded into the church. And he'll kill them all if he don't get what he wants.
And that is?
Tate! Marshal Jared Tate! I know you hear me. This is Brick Cantrell, and if you don't come out and face me, the blood of this whole town will be on your head.
The kid had suspected he knew who was behind the attack on Chalk Butte, but hearing Brick Cantrell's voice still came as a shock to the kid. Not that he had ever heard Cantrell's voice before, of course. The shock came from having been told Cantrell was still in prison and believing that to be true. Whether he had escaped from custody or been released, in the end, it didn't matter. The only important thing was that Cantrell had hostages under the guns of him and his men and was demanding vengeance on Marshal Jared Tate.
You're not so damn smart now, are you?
What are we gonna do?
Come on.
The kid led the way back to the front of the marshal's office.
Blow that out again.
Hey! You hear me, old man? I kill all these people, men, women, and children. Hey!
He's crazy. Pure loco.
He's had 10 years in prison to get that way, if he wasn't to start with. Where's that church he mentioned?
There are three in town. I don't know which one he's talking about. Do you think we can get to the hostages and free them?
That's what I had in mind. He thinks the back door here is covered. He doesn't know we took care of the men he sent back there.
So we can get out and they won't know we're on the loose.
Right. But the two of us can't do much good against all of them unless we have some sort of plan.
We need to find my father and Marshal Tate. Or will the Marshal surrender himself to Cantrell?
I don't think your father would let him do that, even if he wanted to.
Neither do I. We need to get out there. We can work our way back towards the house, and maybe we'll meet Papa and Marshal Tate on the way.
The kid thought about it for a second, and then nodded, even though his companion couldn't see him in the dark.
They'll head for the jail. We'll head for them. Sounds like it might work, but there's something we need to do first. We can't leave those prisoners able to yell and warn Cantrell.
What are you gonna do? We can't just kill them in cold blood.
Maybe not. We can make sure they stay quiet. Tie him up and gag him.
What if I tell you to go to hell instead?
Then I just shoot you both and be done with it.
You're bluffing.
Maybe you're right. It would be quieter and attract less attention if I just cut your throats. Mighty efficient, too.
Better do what he says. I think he's crazy enough to do it.
His partner gave in. He tore strips off his shirt and used them to bind the other man's wrists behind his back. Then fashioned a gag with more scraps of cloth.
All right, come up here by the bars and turn around.
Oh, you're gonna knock me out again, aren't you?
There's still the throat-cutting option.
The outlaw did as he was told. Holly unlocked the door then. The kid dragged the unconscious man into another cell, tied and gagged him. Separated like that, the two outlaws couldn't try to free each other. Satisfied they had done all they could, Holly relocked the cell doors, and she and the kid went to the back door.
I'll go first.
You know, you started giving orders mighty easy there. I'm the peace officer here, not you.
Didn't mean to step on your toes. I was just doing what made sense.
Oh, go ahead. If I don't agree with something, I'll let you know.
With guns drawn, they slipped into the alley.
Hey! Where are you? I'm gonna start shooting the townspeople! One by one! Unless you show yourself!
He won't get away with this.
Someone's in trouble. We have to go help them.
Holly hurried toward the sound of the shots. The kid caught up to her in a couple of quick strides.
It could be a trick to lure us into the open.
Can't take that chance. People's lives could be in danger.
The kid knew she was right about that. They moved quickly through the night shadows. They paused at the rear corner of a building. The kid leaned over to take a look toward Main Street. Someone appeared to be pinned down behind some barrels at the mouth of the narrow passage between buildings. Whoever was behind the barrels returned fire briefly before being forced to duck down again. Those muzzle flashes lit up the gunman's face enough for the kid to recognize Marshal Bob Porter. He saw a second person in the brief flashes and felt sure it was Tate crouched with Porter, although the Chalk Butte lawman was the only one shooting.
Papa, back here!
Porter jerked around in surprise, then grabbed Tate by the arm and dragged him along as he ran through the passage toward his daughter and the kid.
Holly, are you all right?
I'm fine, but we've got to stop those men and free the hostages.
I know. I was hoping we'd find you.
The raiders had sent several men circling around to catch Porter and Tate from behind. Those gunmen got more than they bargained for. The kid was already whirling around to meet this new threat. Porter and Holly were only a hair slower in their reactions as they joined in the fight.
Can't stay here! They'll charge us from the other direction and catch us in a crossfire!
Then let's do what they won't expect and meet them head on. I'll lead the way.
Right behind you. Holly, keep an eye on Marshal Tate.
Thinking their quarry was trapped in the gap between buildings, the would-be killers hadn't bothered to take cover. The sudden counterattack took them by surprise. The raiders, who were still on their feet, broke and ran in the face of the fierce assault. The kid and Porter sent them on their way with a few last shots.
Holly, are you hit?
No, Papa, I'm fine. So is Marshal Tate.
Cantrell's here. Brick Cantrell. I have to arrest him.
I hope you get the chance to do just that, Marshal. Right now, we've got to find those hostages and see if we can free them. One of Cantrell's men said he had them locked up in a church. You have any idea which one, Marshal Porter?
You hear that, Tate? That's a funeral bell for all those hostages. You don't face me like a man right now.
I know that bell. It's the one in the Baptist church.
Then that's probably where they are. We don't have anything else to go on. Can you get us there without running into any more of Cantrell's men?
I can't guarantee that, but we can get there, that's for sure. Come on.
I should go face him, like he wants.
Not now, Marshal. Maybe later, if it comes to that, but not now. We need you with us.
All right. I'll come with you.
Lead the way, Holly. I'll bring up the rear.
It was a good thing Holly knew where she was going, the kid thought as he followed the twisting, turning route she took through Chalk Butte's alleys and back streets. They were all alert, knowing they might run into more of Cantrell's men at any moment.
I warned you, Tate! I warned you!
Oh, did he just...
We'll have to worry about that later. The sooner we free the hostages, the fewer people will lose their lives.
Mr. Morgan's right, Holly. Let's go.
They resumed their trek through the shadows, and a few moments later, Holly came to a stop at the mouth of an alley across the street from a large church with a bell tower and steeple. Lights burned brightly inside it, and men holding rifles were ranged around it.
No doubt about it. That's where they've got the hostages. But how in blazes are we going to get in there?
Cantrell probably has men inside, too, with orders to start shooting the prisoners if the place comes under attack. We have to force them out of there some way.
What about if we set the church on fire?
There are 50 prisoners in there.
I know outlaws. They don't care about anybody but themselves. They'll forget all about the prisoners if it means saving their own hides.
The marshal might be right about that. If we can get somebody into the church to lead the prisoners out, they'd stand a chance of surviving anyway. It's your decision, Marshal.
Well, we'll have to give it a try. We can get a jug of kerosene from the general store, make a fuse of some sort, and heave it up on the church roof.
I could still go out there and meet Cantrell face to face. That's what he wants.
That may be what he wants, but the rest of his men won't be satisfied with that. I'll bet they're planning on looting the whole town, and there's no telling how many people will be killed if they do.
I agree with Mr. Morgan. Nobody doubts your courage, Marshal Tate, but if you surrender, you'll be throwing your life away for nothing.
All right, then. Let's see about getting those people out of there.
The first order of business was to get their hands on some kerosene.
You three stay here. I'll go back to the general store. I can break in and get a jug of kerosene without much trouble, I think.
One of us should go with you. If you run into any of Cantrell's men, you'll need help.
No. If anything happens to me, I want the three of you to be able to carry on without me. We don't want to split our forces in half.
That makes sense. Good luck, Marshal.
The minutes ticked by with maddening slowness as they waited for Porter to return. To help pass the time and distract her from worrying about her father, the kid asked Holly about the layout of the church.
There's a small door in the back that leads through a storeroom and then into the sanctuary.
That's the way we'll need to get in.
I sure have got it guarded.
We'll deal with that when the time comes. Once we're inside, your father and I will take care of any outlaws that are left while you get the townspeople out.
Why do you give me that job? I can shoot too, you know.
I know, but there'll be women and children among those hostages, and I figure they'll be more likely to follow you. In the middle of a bunch of fear and confusion, to them, your father and I will just be two more men with guns.
What you say makes sense. But if I need to get right in the middle of the fight, I will.
I wouldn't expect anything else from you.
A few minutes later, Marshal Bob Porter came out of the shadows. He lifted the jug of kerosene.
Got it. I'll settle up with the storekeeper later for the jug and for the damage I did to his back door.
If we can save the town from being looted, I think he'll be glad to call it square. I was worried about you, Papa.
No need to worry. Let's get this done. We'll have to circle around to come at the church from the back.
Hold on a minute. Who's this?
From the concealing darkness of the alley, they watched as several men strode toward the church, led by a tall man with graying red hair.
That must be Cantrell. I remembered after all this started that I'd heard he was released from prison. I knew I'd heard something about him, but I couldn't think of what it was until then. Maybe if I had...
It wouldn't have made any difference. Nobody would have expected him to waltz in here and take over the whole town like this.
Not the whole town. We're still loose, and we can still make a difference.
Across the street, Brick Cantrell came to a stop.
Bring out another hostage, a woman this time.
Oh, no.
The kid just looked on, his mouth a taut, grim line across his face.
We can't just stand by and let him murder someone else.
We won't.
The kid made a grab for the old woman, but Tate moved with surprising speed, lunging past Porter and Holly and running out into the street.
Cantrell! This ends now!
It was about to end catastrophically, the kid sensed. But maybe they could save the people in the church anyway. He grabbed the jug of kerosene from Porter.
Split up. Come at them from three directions. Holly, get in that church and get those people out.
He raced out into the street as Cantrell swung around.
Take that last!
The kid heaved the jug as hard as he could and dove forward, tackling Tate from behind and knocking him to the ground. Lifting his Colt, the kid tracked the jug as it flew through the air. The can burst apart, spraying kerosene all over Cantrell and the dozen or so outlaws standing near him in front of the church. One man lifted his gun. The flames engulfed his fingers and raced up the sleeve of his shirt. The nightmarish sight was all it took to make the other outlaws hesitate about pulling their triggers. The man who had set his arm on fire fell to the ground, igniting more of the kerosene. Porter and Holly quickly burst out of the alley and split up, Porter going left while Holly went right. Cantrell cast his gun aside, then charged toward the kid and Tate. The kid could have shot him, but Tate tore loose from him and scrambled up, getting in the line of fire. The kid swung his Colt toward the remaining outlaws instead. The kid rolled over and came up on one knee. He reloaded quickly as he saw more of the gang racing along Main Street. The kid brought up his gun. Then he flung himself to the side to avoid being trampled as the horses pounded past him. He rolled over and fired from his belly. From where he lay, the kid suddenly caught sight of Jared Tate and Rick Cantrell, locked in a fierce hand-to-hand struggle in the middle of the street. The kid surged to his feet and drew a bead on Cantrell. The range was a little long, but he thought he could put a bullet through the boss outlaw's head. Before he could squeeze the trigger, a charging horse's shoulder clipped him from behind, knocking him down again. The Colt flew out of the kid's hand. He lay there for a second, stunned, before he was able to get up. As he came to his hands and knees and lurched to his feet, he knew there was no time to look for his gun. He broke into a run toward Cantrell and Tate. While he was still a couple of yards away, the kid launched himself into the air. The diving tackle sent him crashing into Cantrell. Cantrell quickly regained his feet and reached behind his back, producing a knife. While the kid was off balance, Cantrell stuck a foot out and hooked it between the kid's ankles. Cantrell raised the knife above his head. A shudder went through Cantrell's body as the bullet drove into his chest. He stumbled forward a step. The kid rolled to the side and came up on his knees. Jared Tate stood with a revolver gripped in both hands.
Tate!
The kid spotted his gun lying on the ground and hurried to scoop it up. As he did, he looked around and saw bodies scattered up and down the street. The doors of the church were wide open, and people stood in front of the building holding each other. The shooting seemed to be over. Marshall Tate still stood with the gun thrust out in front of him. The kid moved over to him, put his hand on the revolver, and gently pushed it down.
Looks like it's over, Marshall. You finished off Brick Cantrell.
After all this time.
Tate glanced at the kid with the light of understanding in his eyes. It might not last, probably wouldn't last. But for now, Tate knew what had just happened.
Kid!
The cry from Holly made the kid swing around. He saw her running toward him, apparently unhurt. Her father limped along behind her with a bloodstain on his trouser leg, but didn't seem to be injured too badly. For a second, the kid thought Holly was going to throw her arms around him, but she stopped before she let herself get completely carried away.
Are you all right?
I'll be sore and bruised in the morning, but it's nothing to worry about. Are the outlaws all dead, Marshal?
Dead or wounded bad enough they won't put up a fight anymore. That is, the ones who didn't light a shuck out of here when they saw the fight going against them. When Holly shot down the guards in the church and freed the hostages, some of the townspeople got their hands on guns and started getting even with Cantrell's men. That tipped the balance in our favor.
The kid nodded. When good men stood up to evil, things didn't always work out in their favor. But when good men did nothing, evil always won.
So you shot it out with the guards in the church, did you?
I told you I can handle a gun.
That you did. I'm glad we were on the same side.
We've got some prisoners to round up and put in jail.
I can give you a hand with that.
Thanks, Marshal. I'll take you up on it.
The two lawmen moved off to handle mopping up after the battle. Several armed townsmen came out to help them.
We were lucky. What Marshal Tate did could have gotten us all killed.
He sure stood tall there at the end, though, didn't he?
He did.
Not everyone gets a last hurrah like that. I think Jared Tate just made the most of his.
Marshal Bob Porter's leg wound wasn't bad enough to keep him from getting around, but the kid thought it might be a good idea to stay in Chalk Butte for a few more days, just in case any more trouble cropped up. Holly was an able deputy, but the law could always use a helping hand. Porter sent a wire to the county sheriff, advising him of the prisoners he was holding in his jail, the remnants of the gang Brick Cantrell had put together. All of them were wanted outlaws, so the sheriff was glad to travel to Chalk Butte with some deputies and take them off Porter's hands. With that taken care of, the town settled back into being the peaceful little community it had been before the kid and Tate rode in. Well, peaceful other than the occasional visit from the Boomhausers. One evening, the kid and Porter sat on the front porch of the Marshall's house. Tate had offered to dry the dishes for Holly, so the two of them were still inside.
I reckon you'll be leaving pretty soon.
I set out to take Marshal Tate back to his daughter's place. I suppose I need to get around to it, even though the past few days here have been mighty pleasant.
Look, don't take this the wrong way, but I think it's best you move on, too. Holly's taken a real liking to you, kid. But I got a hunch you're not the sort of man to stay in one place for too long. That usually spells trouble for a woman who's grown fond of you.
I'd never do anything to hurt your daughter, Marshal. You have my word on that.
Well, not on purpose, maybe, but when you ride away, it's gonna hurt her anyway. It'll just get worse the longer you're here.
That sounds like you're telling me to get out of town.
Well, not exactly. But since you're gonna be leaving anyway...
I understand.
Now, Jared, on the other hand, I'll be sorry to see him go. He's a fine hombre, and he's been mighty helpful around here. I know he's got to get back home, though.
Maybe his daughter will bring him back to visit sometime.
Well, maybe. He's already forgotten the battle with Cantrell. He won't remember any of us for very long.
I'm afraid you're right about that.
The next morning, the kid got their gear together and saddled their horses.
What are you doing?
Getting ready to ride. Marshal Tate and I still need to get to Wichita.
You weren't going to tell me? You were just going to ride off without saying
goodbye? I didn't say that. Anyway, your father knows about this.
He didn't say anything to me. Do you think you'll ever ride this way again?
That's hard to say. Can't rule it out.
But you can't promise it, either.
I don't like to make promises if I don't know whether I can keep them. I sort of go where the wind takes me these days.
Like some dime novel hero?
More than you know.
Marshal Tate didn't seem to be too fond of the idea of leaving Chalk Butte, but he went along without causing any trouble. He shook hands with Porter, and then Holly hugged him.
You're welcome back here anytime, Marshal.
Why, thank you, ma'am. What was your name again?
It's Holly.
Oh, of course. Goodbye, Holly.
Good luck on the rest of your journey. If you think about it, send me a wire to let us know you got there all right.
I'll do that.
The kid turned toward his buckskin, but Holly was there. She put her arms around him, but it was no affectionate hug like the one she had given Tate. She twined her arms around his neck and pulled his head down so her mouth found his in a passionate kiss.
There. I wanted you to know what you were riding away from.
Believe me, I know.
Wichita was a big town. Nothing like New York or Boston or San Francisco, of course, or even St. Louis or Denver. But compared to places like Chalk Butte or Copperhead Springs, Wichita was a real metropolis. Constance had given Bertha Edwards' address to the kid back in Copperhead Springs. He asked directions and found the street without too much trouble. It was lined with cottonwoods. The kid and Marshall Tate rode along looking for the Edwards house. It was a nice neighborhood, the sort of place where normal families lived. At least, that's what the kid thought. He couldn't be sure, he reminded himself, because he'd never been part of a normal family. Growing up, his mother had been one of the richest women in the country, and after her death, he had found himself in the position of taking over the vast Browning business and financial empire. Oh, and his real father had turned out to be one of the most notorious gunfighters in the Old West, a living legend who still roamed the frontier as one of the last of that dying breed. But his past had made him the man he was, and he could live with that.
I think this is it.
They stopped in front of a small, neat house with whitewashed walls, flower boxes under the windows, and a picket fence around the yard.
Does the place look familiar to you, Marshall?
I don't think I've ever seen this house before. Who is it that's supposed to live here?
Your daughter Bertha and her husband Tim. Their last name is Edwards.
If you say so.
The kid tightened his jaw and held in the sigh, wanting to escape. He was filled with the fervent hope he would never fall victim to whatever malady had claimed Jared Tate. It was more than simple old age. They dismounted and tied their horses to the fence. The kid opened the gate and ushered Tate through it onto the walk leading to a small porch. They went up the steps. He immediately saw the resemblance between Marshall Tate and the woman who opened the door. She was lean, with faded blonde hair, and looked somewhat older than her years.
Mrs. Edwards?
She ignored him, staring past him at Tate with slowly widening eyes.
Papa? Is that really you?
Hello.
Bertha Edwards' mouth twisted briefly in a grimace. She looked at the kid.
You're Mr. Morgan?
That's right, ma'am.
I got a wire from Marshall Cumberland in Copperhead Springs saying you were bringing my father home. Come on in, I suppose.
Thank you. Let's go, Marshall.
All right.
Bertha ushered them into a nicely furnished parlor.
Can I get you something, Mr. Morgan? Some coffee?
That would be fine. Thank you.
I could use some coffee, too.
Of course, Papa. Go ahead and sit down.
When Bertha had left the room and the kid and Tate had taken their seats, the old lawman leaned over.
She keeps calling me Papa.
That's because she's your daughter, Marshall. You need to try hard to remember her.
Are you sure about that? My daughter lives in Copperhead Springs with my wife. We're not in Copperhead Springs, are we?
No. Things have changed since the last time you remember.
I don't see how.
Bertha came back into the room with cups of coffee on a tray. She handed them to the kid and Tate, then sat down on a sofa across from them with the tray on her knees.
Thank you for bringing him home, Mr. Morgan. I can't tell you how worried I've been about him.
Yes, ma'am, I'm sure.
Did you have any trouble along the way? I expected you to be here sooner.
There was a little trouble. Nothing to worry about, though. Your father is fine.
He's not fine. He'll never be fine. Not the way he is now.
Well, I mean, he...
I'm sorry. I shouldn't let that out. It's just difficult.
I'm sure it is.
I can pay you for your time and trouble getting him here. My husband doesn't make a great deal of money. He's a clerk in a law office, but we have a little set aside.
That's not necessary at all. I was headed this direction anyway, and I was glad to have your father's company on the trail.
Kid, when are we leaving? We need to get back to Copperhead Springs.
You're not going back to Copperhead Springs. You don't live there anymore. Mama's dead. You could remember that if you just try.
Tate blinked at the rebuke, obviously confused.
Again, I'm sorry, Mr. Morgan. I'm glad to see him. I really am, and I'm grateful to you, but he's just so damn frustrating.
Yes, ma'am.
The kid would have rather faced another horde of rampaging outlaws than deal with a situation like that. He set the cup on a small side table and stood up.
I should be going.
Wait up, kid. I'll come with you.
Sorry, Marshall, but you have to stay here.
But I don't want to.
It'll be fine. Your daughter will take good care of you.
I won't let you run off again and scare us half to death, that's for sure.
I don't understand.
There's a big surprise.
Bertha stood up and strode across the room to take hold of her father's arm.
Come with me. I'll take you to your room, and you'll stay there this time. Do you understand that?
She glanced at the kid.
Thanks again.
Sure.
You can let yourself out.
He stepped out onto the porch and eased the door closed behind him. Going down those steps and walking back to his horse was one of the hardest things the kid had ever done.
Yeah, that bunch of outlaws would be welcome right now. You could even throw in an Apache war party. Just about anything would be better than this.
The kid was still worried he'd done the wrong thing by leaving Tate at his daughter's when someone knocked on the door of his hotel room that evening. When the kid opened the door, he found a man he had never seen before standing in the corridor. The man wore a brown tweed suit and had a mustache, bushy side whiskers, and a harried look about him. He didn't seem threatening.
Mr. Morgan?
That's right. What can I do for you?
My name is Timothy Edwards. My father-in-law is Jared Tate.
Of course. How do you do, Mr. Edwards?
Not too well right now. Have you seen Jared?
Not since leaving him with your wife at your house this afternoon. Isn't he there?
No, the old... he's run away again. My wife claimed she was watching him the whole time, but somehow he got out of the house and disappeared.
Have you gone to the police? He couldn't have gotten far.
Well, he took his horse with him. Bertha searched the neighborhood, but by then he was long gone.
The kid realized he was about to smile and managed not to. He was sort of pleased Tate had lit a shuck out of there, but some legitimate reasons to worry about him wandering around by himself came to mind.
We thought maybe he might have come here, since the two of you seem to be friends.
We rode some tough trails together, that's true, but I haven't seen him. He wouldn't have known where I was staying anyway.
Oh, no, I guess not. I'll have to go to the law. They'll find him, and when they do, I'm afraid we're not going to have any choice but to lock him up somehow. We can't have this happening all the time.
Hold on a minute. He's got it in his head he still lives in Copperhead Springs. Maybe he headed for there again, like he did before.
Well, that makes sense. But we still have to find him.
Of course. I'll start trailing him at first light.
You really think you can pick up his trail?
I know the way to Copperhead Springs from here, and so does Marshall Tate. I can catch up to him. I don't think he would travel through the night. He probably stopped and made camp. He'll be a few miles ahead of me, but it shouldn't take more than a day or two to close that gap.
But in the meantime, something could happen to him. I don't want my wife put through that.
You can go to the authorities here, of course. That's probably a good idea. They can search here in town, but I don't think they'll find him. My hunch is he's somewhere out on the trail, like he would have been in the old days.
Thank you. I know this isn't your problem, Mr. Morgan. I can pay you for your help.
Like I told your wife, just forget about that. Marshall Tate saved my life twice. I'm glad to do anything I can to give him a hand.
Well, it's funny the way you call him Marshall Tate. He hasn't been a lawman for a long time.
I reckon Jared Tate will always be a lawman where it counts. Inside.
The kid left at first light in the morning, heading west out of Wichita on the road that would eventually turn into the trail leading to Copperhead Springs. He had no way of knowing for sure that Tate had gone that way, but it certainly seemed likely. The kid's gut seldom steered him wrong, and it was telling him he would find Tate by going in that direction. About 10 miles west of town, he found something supporting his theory. The smell of ashes led him off the road to a small pond where someone had camped the night before. The kid could see where the traveler had built a fire. He dismounted and hunkered on his heels to study the hoof prints left by the horse that had been picketed nearby. He thought they looked like the prints left by the horse Marshall Tate had been riding for the past few weeks. The ashes of the campfire were cold. Tate had gotten an early start, too. The kid swung back up into the saddle and rode on. The first settlers in that part of Kansas had been farmers, and the lack of trees had led them to build their homes out of blocks of sod, usually against the side of a small rolling hill they had hollowed out. The roofs, which extended out from the hill crest, were of sod and thatch. Those dwellings were cold in the winter, damp always, but not too bad during the summer. As the decades had gone by, the successful farmers had been able to afford to build real houses of lumber, and most of the so-called soddies had been abandoned. Given the materials of which they were constructed, it was no surprise many of them had collapsed, going back to the earth from which they had sprung. Some of the more sturdily built soddies were still standing, And that afternoon, the kid noticed smoke coming from the chimney of one of them, a couple of hundred yards north of the trail. His keen eyes spotted something else, and he reined in. A horse was tied to a hitching post in front of the homestead, and unless the kid was mistaken, it was the same animal Marshall Tate had been riding.
Tate must have stopped here at this farm.
The kid swung the buckskin toward the soddy. He hoped they had treated him kindly. As he came closer and got a better look at the horse, he was certain it belonged to Tate. The chore had turned out to be considerably easier than he'd expected. He could have Tate back in Wichita by nightfall if they hurried. A frown creased the kid's forehead as that thought crossed his mind. Did he really want to take Tate back to his daughter's house? That was what he'd set out to do, of course, when he agreed to accompany the old lawman from Copperhead Springs back to Wichita. But he had carried out that task. His responsibility was over. It sure as hell wasn't his job to make Tate stay somewhere he didn't want to stay. What else was Tate going to do, though? He couldn't be out on his own. Sometimes he couldn't remember even the simplest things. Something was bound to happen to him. The logic of that realization warred with the revulsion the kid felt at the idea of Tate spending the rest of his days locked in a room, not understanding where he was or why he was stuck there, never seeing anyone except two people who might as well have been strangers to him. Bertha Edwards might actually love her father, but she also resented him and had no patience with him. And the kid had never had to walk in her shoes. He couldn't judge her, but he didn't know if he could take Tate back to her either. With those thoughts racing through his head, he almost didn't notice the fields around the soddy were overgrown, gone back to nature. A plow sat off to one side of the dwelling, but it was covered with rust and obviously hadn't been used for years. The place had been abandoned. But if that was the case, why was smoke coming from the chimney? Why was Tate's horse tied up outside? Those questions had just crossed the kid's mind, causing him to grow wary, when a man stepped out of the soddy and pointed a rifle at him. The kid leaned forward in the saddle and drove his heels into the buckskin's flanks to send the horse leaping ahead. At the same time, he drew his Colt. Up close, the kid recognized the man as the smaller of the two moonshiners he and Tate had encountered on the trail from Copperhead Springs.
Drop it!
The kid raised his Colt. The kid left the saddle in a rolling dive that carried him off to the side of the soddy's entrance. The rifleman, swaying from his wound, tried to track him with the barrel of the Winchester. Tilting his gun barrel, the kid aimed, but the wounded rifleman was already ducking back through the soddy's door.
Morgan! Morgan, you hear me? We got the old marshal in here. Figured you'd come looking for him, and sure enough, you did. Throw your gun away and come out here where I can see you, or we'll kill him.
The kid didn't say anything. The rifleman had revealed he wasn't alone in there. The kid figured the man's heavyset partner, the one whose foot the wagon had fallen on, was inside the soddy too.
I ain't bluffing, Morgan. You do what I say, or you can listen to the old man squeal while we're killing him.
How do I know he's not dead already?
Take your hand off his mouth and let him talk, Benny.
Kid, don't pay any attention to what those two polecats say. They're not gonna hurt me. They know they'll swing for it if they do.
You better not listen to him, Morgan. You're the one we really want. Do like I told you, and we'll let the old man live.
The kid didn't believe that for a second. The men intended to kill both of them.
You two are lucky goats. I told those gunslinging brothers where to find you, and I figured they'd kill you for sure. But you come out of that alive, and I hear you beat a whole gang of outlaws, too. Well, your luck's run out, you hear me? Today's the day you... the day you die.
It sounds more to me like you're the one who's dying, amigo. I hit you pretty hard, didn't I? Think you can hang on long enough to get your revenge?
You shut up! I'll be fine.
I don't think so. I think you're losing blood and you're going to pass out soon. Benny's not a killer. I remember that from when we met before. As soon as you're gone, he's going to surrender because he doesn't want to hang.
Shut up! Benny, I want you to snap that old man's neck. Ring it like he was the damn chicken.
Selman, I don't know.
Let y'all do it, I'll tell you.
The kid charged up the side of the hill while Selman was yelling at his partner. If the soddy had been unused for quite a while, the roof was bound to have been weakened by the elements. The beams were probably rotten. The kid braced himself for a second, then jumped, coming down as hard as he could near where the stovepipe chimney stuck up through the roof. The roof crashed down, taking the kid with it. Selman was struggling to get up from under the collapsed roof. He thrust the rifle at the kid. The kid surged up. Benny's hands locked around the kid's throat as his weight bore the smaller man backward. The kid had no other choice. He jammed the Colt's barrel against Benny.
Marshall? Marshall Tate?
The old lawman pawed dirt off him and struggled to his feet.
Hey, kid. You all right?
I'm fine. How about you?
Never better. Now, I wasn't sure how that was going to turn out, though. Those boys were loco.
That they were. Are you ready to go home, Marshal?
Back to Copperhead Springs?
No, I'm afraid not. But I've got something else in mind.
Marshal Bob Porter was sitting in a cane-bottom chair on the porch of his office when the kid and Tate rode up.
Well, I didn't expect to see you two fellas again so soon.
It turns out that Marshal Tate needs a place to stay. And the way you were talking when we were here before, I thought you might have a job for him.
What about his daughter?
I already sent her a wire letting her know that he's safe, and then it'll be looked after. Was I right, Marshal?
There's a sleeping porch on our house we can turn into an extra room. I can't think of a better reason for doing that.
Then I could stay here with you, Marshal?
Well, of course you can. We'll be glad to have you.
Tate shook hands with Porter, and the two lawmen slapped each other on the back.
Marshal, why don't you go on into the office? I'll be there in a minute.
Sure. Be seeing you, kid.
Hasta la vista, Marshal.
Is the law from Wichita gonna come after me for kidnapping an old man?
No. I heard back from the marshal's daughter before we ever came here. She wasn't too happy with the idea at first, but she came around. I think maybe she knows he'll be better off here, and she wants what's best for him. She said she can't pay you for looking after him, though.
Aw, shoot, I don't want any pay. There's still a good man in there. I'll be glad to have him around.
The kid nodded, but knew he was going to have Claudius Turnbuckle send a regular bank draft to Marshal Porter. Jared Tate would be looked after for the rest of his life and would be able to spend his days in a place where he was happy and comfortable.
Where's Holly?
She's at the house. You want to go see her?
I'm not sure that would be a good idea.
She'll be mad as a hornet if she finds out you were here and didn't even say hello.
She'll get over it. Anyway, I've got places to be.
Oh? Where's that?
Yonder.
He waved a hand and was gone. Riding out of Chalk Butte, not sure where he was going next, but satisfied with knowing he was moving on, answering the call of the frontier while it still existed in the hearts and minds of the men and women who called it home. The Loner, Book 15, Bullets Don't Die, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2013, J.A. Johnstone. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation, all rights reserved. Production copyright 2013, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Unauthorized download and or duplication prohibited. Performed by Ken Jackson, Eric Messner, David Jordan, Margie Tompros, Dylan Lynch, Elizabeth Jernigan, Nick DePinto, Michael Glenn, David Coyne, Michael John Casey, Danny Gavigan, Thomas Keegan, Evan Casey, Gary Tells, Terrence Aselford, Eva Wilhelm, Christopher Graybill, Nathaniel Perry, and Mort Shelby. Additional red shirts by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Nathaniel Perry. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing, graphic audio sound design, and book adaptation by Nathaniel Perry. The Loner theme was composed by Nathaniel Perry, with additional original music by Johann Detweiler, Thomas Hogan, and Nathaniel Perry. If you enjoyed The Loner, be sure to look for William W. Johnstone and J.A. Johnstone's newest title, Butch Cassidy, The Lost Years. Available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our action-pumped titles, as well as free downloadable extras, audio guides, and podcasts. Keep listening for a preview of another thrilling title in graphic audio.
Justin Nash number 2, Powder River.
Me? My name's Justin Nash. These days I was going by the name of James Beatty.
Go home, Beatty. A horse dealer. That's about one step above a thief and one step below a maniac.
At one time, I had been known as Miller Crow.
Crow? You dirty, rotten coward, come face me!
I lost that name and the wife who went with it when I murdered a crooked sheriff in Kansas City. Oh, and I resemble my cousin, Jesse Woodson James of Clay County, Missouri. Lots of folk mistook me for him. That was one more reason I tried to go unnoticed.
Save it, Crow, Beatty, Jesse James, whoever you are. I'm sure if you talk long enough, you'll make me change my mind and shoot you.
My partner was Quiet Jack Smith. We had been riding together on and off since before the war had ended. He might well have been the closest thing I ever had to a best friend in this life, which didn't mean that there weren't times I would have gladly let him get shot.
It means you can cause more trouble in the shortest time than anybody I've ever seen. You've shot my sightseeing plumb to hell.
We'd heard talk all the way from the Missouri that Red Cloud Sioux had allied with the Cheyenne and Arapaho and were killing anything that moved between here and the Nebraska Territory and Fort Phil Kearny.
Well, Major, we're taking horses up Powder River up to Fort Kearny. I'm a dealer out of Kansas. These fellers work for me.
Do you realize what's going on up there? There's a war going on. Are you stupid or something? This town is disappearing, wagon load at a time. And all of them heading south, not north, not west, south. Doesn't that register? Any fool can get into Powder River. The difficulty will be getting out again.
Up here it was Sioux and Cheyenne. Enough of them to have the army tiptoeing around Montana, and enough to impede the laying of track for the largest railroad in the world. At least, that's the way it read in the newspapers. Red Cloud's warriors had grown steadily in numbers, and he'd served notice. This was his hunting ground, and all whites would leave or die.
You have seen what happened to others. Still you come. Why?
Business.
Your business is to come into my country? To bring horses to my enemies?
I can't deny that's why we came here. I reckon we hadn't looked at it that way.
None of your people look at it that way. I don't understand.
There were no good reasons for our going out there or doing what we did. But I've always felt that if a man needs good reasons for everything he does, he'll die in a rocking chair with nothing to remember but yesterday's weather.
Jesus, Jack. It's Long Jake and his posse.
Good. I was afraid we'd run out of something to do.
What are y'all looking at? The hell's that?
Get down, you idiot!
Scopes. That shot'll knock your head off. I admire a fellow who goes with the latest in shooting gear.
That's dangerous.
I didn't go to Powder River as I once thought to bleed it, rob it, or to watch it die. I went to feel it, breathe it, and let it cleanse me. Maybe that's why we were all there, but just couldn't realize it. And that's a shame.
Available now in Graphic Audio.
If you can't find that Graphic Audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net. where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220, or go to www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different Graphic Audio series, or want the complete series now, check out our long-haul MP3 series sets, conveniently shipped to you on a USB flash drive. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter, like us on Facebook, or follow us on Twitter.